Coming up on Hometown Alaska, host Dave Waldron sits down with Anchorage School District Superintendent Dr. Jarrett Bryant. They'll discuss what to expect from this coming school year. We'll find out what failed school bonds mean for the district and what students, parents, and teachers can look forward to. And on State of Art, join me, Ammon Swenson, for a conversation with musician Gus Engelhorn. The former pro snowboarder from Alaska released his fourth studio album called The Broken Balladeer earlier this year. We'll hear about him working with some of his 90s music heroes and try to get a peek inside his unique head. That's all coming up next on Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media.
Hello and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm Dave Waldron, and today we're heading back to school. As of this morning, teachers are in the classroom, and on Wednesday, school will begin for most K through 12 students in the Anchorage School District. And as usual, this year will bring many challenges. Last April, voters rejected not one, but two ballots aimed at funding ASD. So what does that mean for the 2026 school year staff and program offerings? And what can parents, teachers, and students look forward to as they head back to the classrooms? And with me to answer those questions is Anchorage School District Superintendent Dr. Jarrett Bryant. Dr. Bryant, welcome back to Hometown Alaska.
Thank you, Dave. It's a pleasure to be back here.
It's great to have you back. Well, I want to get into a lot today, mostly regarding the upcoming school year that is starting right now. But before I do that, I just kind of want to check in with you, because when we last spoke in 2024, there was a lot going on. You were implementing some pretty big changes that you had decided along with the school board, involving new start times, new middle school enrollment. I just want to check in and see how those are going, because at the time you were pretty optimistic about the plan, and I just kind of want to see what the response has been. And let's start with the first one, how the community and ASD responded to those new start times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great question, Dave. So going back to when we started discussing this change, you might recall that the board and I took a year to really understand the community sentiment before the changes went into effect. Mm-hmm. And the reason why we moved in that direction was because of all of the research that suggests that aligning start times to the science of adolescent sleep, it results in higher attendance and what have you. So what we've done is a series of analyses. I think we provided two publicly to the school board where we're still monitoring, but it's such a large change that happened within the context of many changes, including some changes to funding and that sort of thing, to where we're still not at the point to where we can say school start times led to this, mm-hmm. but we know it's a point that we need to continue to monitor. And the community's given us some great feedback to improve what we're currently doing. And of course, we'll always have some parents that will advocate for the way that it used to be.
Sure, yeah. Yes, we can be stubborn in our ways for sure. Well, let's talk about the middle school thing. How have they been able to handle that influx of those sixth graders that became part of middle schools back in 2024?
Yeah, it's hard to believe that this change has taken place for a number of years now.
I guess
just to take a step back to repeat probably what I shared a few years ago was we noticed one thing in ASD, which is that there were different experiences for different middle schoolers, just depending on where you lived. So having sixth graders in middle schools in ASD is not new. We had been doing that in a number of buildings. But what was new is that we said we need to have a standardized experience for our middle school students. So we wanted to make sure that if you're in middle school, you have access to the full breadth of electives that you would have at a comprehensive middle school. We also wanted to make sure that you had access to sports, rigor. There are quite a number of sixth graders who are ready for math beyond what was offered in their elementary school. We also noticed some developmental concerns. So for example, you would have some middle schoolers that would move from middle school to middle school. And in the previous structure, some sixth graders would be demoted back to elementary school if their parents chose to enroll in the middle school where that was offered in elementary building. So fast forward to the past few years, I think we've seen a number of positive things in this direction. So one, last year, we actually saw a pretty significant rise in eighth grade math scores. The proficiency rose by 5% on the Alaska state exam. And one of the reasons why I think that happened was because we have a strong structure in middle school called the middle school model, where essentially middle school educators have a dedicated hour during the day to talk about students of interest to the teachers for extra support or what have you. A very strong model grounded in research that we've sought to protect over many years of very difficult budget times. And now every middle schooler gets to have that experience. And I just got a sneak peek into the assessment data for 2026. And it looks like we're holding strong on being above the state averages in middle school for both math and ELA.
Oh, that's
so
great.
Yeah, so we are seeing some positive things to come from it. And then, of course, this feeds into some ways that we can continue to make improvements. So one thing that's happened since we last spoke was we implemented structured transition times for sixth graders and ninth graders. So something that our families now notice is that sixth graders have a dedicated day to get acclimated to the new structures of middle school. Sixth and ninth grade are very important transitional times for students, and it's our theory of action that if you give those students time to breathe without the peer pressures of the older students around, that they're able to acclimate and get into their routines better. So I think for that and a number of reasons, we've seen some positive things. Now, one of the concerns that we had heard was, you know, if you make this shift, doesn't that mean that you have middle schools that are too full?
Right.
And we did see some overcrowding in some situations, and that's why you'll notice that we did make some tweaks to boundaries this past year. And then in the big picture, what the community needs to know is that our enrollment across K-12 is going down. Mm-hmm. So last year alone, we lost about 250 middle school students, and that trend continues to go in that direction. And yet we know when our buildings are fully utilized, you're more likely to have robust elective offerings and a wide array of course selections and that sort of thing. So we do need to keep our eye on the enrollment numbers, but that's another benefit of having this change is that we have capacity middle schools.
So enrollment is trending down. You can look at kindergarten enrollment this year and still see that it is trending down. Is that the case?
It's still trending down. Okay. I haven't looked at the kindergarten numbers for this cohort, but when you look at the data for last year's kindergartners, you would see that you have essentially the same number of kindergarten students as you have 12th graders. And that's actually not a good sign because typically in a school system, you would have more kindergartners than you would have high school seniors because you have some attrition that happens on the K-12 spectrum. So when those numbers are identical, it shows you that over the next 10 years, we could be looking at more enrollment declines. And in the Anchorage context, we don't have a huge private school footprint in terms of percent of students served. We are seeing a shift to more homeschool options and that sort of thing, but really declining birth rates and out-migration would be a huge driver for the declines we're seeing here in this context.
Got it. So maybe good for the middle school situation and bad for other things. All right, well, I want to move on to the ballots. It's kind of like the elephant in the room, I feel like, that I mentioned at the top of the show. Back in April, we had those two ballots. It was Prop 1 and Prop 9. Prop 1 was for the improvements, the upgrades, and construction at multiple schools across Anchorage. And Prop 9 was that one-time property tax levy to help fund ASD. It was about $12 million. So both of the ballots ended up failing, albeit by a slim margin, right? But before we talk about what that means exactly for the school district, I just want to hear what your reaction was when the ballot results came in on election day.
Sure. The outcome of the election was not the outcome that we had hoped for because our schools are in dire need of resources for both propositions. The proposition 9, the levy, would have gone towards class size relief, which above and beyond, when you talk to parents, that's the number one thing that they desire in their schools, manageable class sizes. And then we have about $1.5 billion in deferred maintenance across all of our buildings in ASD. So this bond would have gone a long way in helping address leaky roofs and upgrading security systems. So we were certainly disappointed by the outcome. But as I shared in my communication I sent shortly after the election was the results showed us what the public said, but now it's time to do the hard work of understanding why they were saying what they were saying, which is now is not the right time to make those investments in the Anchorage School District. So one thing I do want to share is that this was a very consequential election year for ASD when it came to the bond and levy propositions because of the dire needs in our schools. And one thing that the public might have missed was that ASD was actually closely monitoring progress towards the bond passing months before the election actually happened. So we had commissioned a poll back in February, and what we found was that the bond was even farther behind back in February.
Really?
And this is before any school closures had happened. This is before what a lot of people cite as the reasons for the bond failing had actually happened. Mm-hmm. When we did the initial poll, we partnered with Alaska Survey Research. They saw it failing at 46%. So wow. When the election took place, we were still disappointed, but it was 49%. So some might say that we gained some ground, but just not enough. But regardless, when the outcome took place, the first thing that I did was go back to the community and understand their perspectives. So we worked with Alaska Survey Research again, I think about a month or two after the bond election happened, and I got some very fascinating data that really gives me some optimism for future bond propositions, and it really lends itself into a new initiative that we can talk more about called ASD Listens, which is really a follow-up on that data, because I do think there's an opportunity to gain momentum with the public, to restore and strengthen trust amongst the public, and to start upgrading our school facilities for generations to come.
Yeah, I do want to hear about that because pretty much, you know, almost every parent I talked to were kind of in shock at those results. I think if you really take a deep look at Anchorage's voting history, you'll see we overwhelmingly support certain things in our city, right? Roads, public safety, parks, and education. So how have you been able to make sense of that voter response that they rejected this, not only the one-time funding ballot, but something as basic as maintenance and upgrades? I mean, it's usually a universal agreed upon thing to fix a leaky roof, right? Mm-hmm. So what is that disconnect right now between ASD and the public?
I think something to look at in the bigger picture is that bonds for schools are narrow. Even the one the previous year was narrowly on the positive side where the bond passed.
Was that the base student allocation increase or was that a different one?
No, I'm just talking about bond propositions
bond
at this
point.
So they're usually very narrow in general. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons why we wanted to do a pre-bond poll, because we knew that with two ASD propositions on the ballot that could mean that folks would be less likely to endorse either of them, or they may gravitate towards one over the other. And in our pre-poll data or pre-bond data, it actually showed that there was more of an affinity towards the levy that would have reduced class sizes than the bond for a number of reasons. But actually, a bond failed as recently as 5 years ago, the year before I joined ASD, for a number of reasons. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I did have to take on was rechanging the strategy, both the types of things that are on the bond. You'll notice that when I came to ASD, the bond figure was actually much smaller than it had been in the past. And then we had three successful years of bonds passing. Mm-hmm. And now we have this obstacle, and that's why we looked really deeply into that polling data. So a couple of highlights for the public to hear is that on both ends, for those who voted yes and those who voted no, there's about 10% of people that could have gone either way. So in the big picture, that means that this proposition is winnable in the future. We have to change our strategy. We have to do better and strengthen that trust with the public. But this is something that can happen for Anchorage schools. But I think the other thing was looking at, for those who voted no, why was the reason that they voted no? And the survey actually asked a series of yes-no questions to participants. They tried to establish a baseline. So they asked the public, do you think taxes are too high? Mm-hmm. And actually 73% of the Anchorage community said the property taxes are too high. But here's the other fascinating thing.
Surprise there.
Yeah. But so that was 73%.
Okay.
And then 72% of people said that the legislature needs to step up and fund schools better. 72%.
Oh.
But here's the thing that we need to work on. 68% of the public says that ASD doesn't spend its money wisely. So that was actually the number three highest rated thing right after the legislature needs to step up, is that ASD needs to change the way that it spends its money, or at least the way that they perceive that it spends its money.
Right.
Those things are very close together, and that tells me that two things can be true at once. The public can feel that we need to do more for our schools, but there's also some internal reflection reflections that we can do as a district to earn that public trust. So it's exciting to me because now is our time to meet this moment and to show the public that we can take a defeat in stride and we can really do what's best for kids. And that's to, one, do some education. There are some misperceptions and misinformation out there, but there are some practical things that we can do that the public's telling us. So with that said, a lot of people think that school closures had a lot to do with the bond failing. And there certainly are some people that wrote in the open-ended responses that, yeah, I voted no because ASD chose to close schools this year. But you also see responses that say the opposite, where some people only voted yes because ASD chose to close schools this year. And that brings me to my next stat that a lot of people don't realize is that based off of our post-bond survey, 62% of the public supports consolidating schools. So that's not too far off from those that said ASD doesn't spend its money wisely. And then that number is even higher amongst ASD parents, because the more and more I get out there in the community, the more parents tell me that, yeah, like if we combine schools, there's an opportunity for more resources for the average neighborhood school student. It's a complicated, very controversial discussion to be had, but I think the point I'm trying to make is that this data really challenge our assumptions. And that's what motivated me to launch ASD Listens, which is really to take some of the feedback that we got from that survey and dive a little deeper. So the number one question I'm trying to understand better is to understand, what will it take? What specific actions and tactics can the district take on to try to earn back that public trust, to try to bolster support? And I want the public to tell me what that is. And then I want to have transparent conversations with the school board about what's feasible, because we can't govern ourselves by a survey. The school board governs the schools, but we need to keep the public sentiments in mind, because there might be something that's on their mind that we're not addressing at our school board meetings or in our communications. So it's really fascinating. I could talk about it for hours, but ASD Listens is much bigger than a survey or a poll. It's really about expanding and accelerating feedback loops on the issues that are most pressing for the Anchorage School District.
And if I'm remembering right, Jared, you're really not a big fan of these one-time ballot funding measures, right? You're more interested in the long-term, like base student allocation kind of increases to funding, right? How do we get to that point where we're not putting this on the ballot every single election cycle?
Yeah, I agree. And one of the reasons why I support permanent increases to the base student allocation is simply because districts can plan in advance. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
they know how many teachers they'll have
exactly
the following year.
Exactly. Yeah. And I don't want us as a state to normalize what's happened for 2 years in a row now. So yes, last summer there was a historic BSA increase that took place, but we didn't know about that funding until 2 weeks before school started.
Right.
So I was rolling up my sleeves, going into the post office, recruiting retired teachers, and we made it happen for our kids. But now, this year is even worse in some ways, because we don't even know the full impact or amount of funding until August 31st, because the legislators put in the law that we have to wait for the revenue commissioner to determine the degree of surplus revenues from the elevated oil prices that we're seeing right now today. So now we're not even going to know the state of funding until after school started. So we're beginning to normalize something that shouldn't be normal in the first place. There's models for this across the country where when you tell school boards and superintendents what they have to spend, they'll meet the moment and invest that towards kids. But when you're on edge, not knowing if they will or won't, you see these really difficult decisions that have to be made before all the information is known. So that's my number one charge for why we need to make that happen. Now, why doesn't it happen? For a couple things. I would say the first reason would be around we need a long-term vision for diversifying our economy in Alaska. And I don't think that anybody has the political courage to say we need to stop this so we can double down on that or vice versa. And I think there are concerns about the degree to which we can invest. I mean, the reason why we're in the situation where school districts have to wait until August 31st to know their funding is because we're literally funding our schools, kind of our nuts and bolts of the state, based off of surplus revenues from a war. What's the long-term plan here? And until somebody takes a step back and says, this is the vision for Alaska, these are my priorities, and this is how we're going to sustain it, I'm not surprised that school boards are, you know, on edge trying to figure out things, because they're literally living week by week when we should really be governing on the year by year basis. So that's the state of affairs.
Totally. And well, let's talk about what the failure of those ballots actually mean. I'm curious. I know you don't have an actual budget that you know is going to be finalized until the 31st, as you said. But there was that $12 million that we could have had in ASD, and now we don't. So what does that mean for potential program cuts or layoffs? Is that something you're anticipating?
So with those propositions, that we were operating in a different fiscal year. So we were saying if the community were to pass these levies, we will go out and we will hire these teachers for this upcoming school year.
Got it.
So with the levy not passing in April, the money was not in the bank. So we had to pivot and we had to make do with what we knew at the time. Now, the good news for the public is that our legislature, despite the fact that it's really difficult to turn the state's economic picture completely around, we have some incredible legislators that have done what it takes to deliver more resources for schools. So that's why in July, we actually had a special school board meeting because the legislature and governor had approved a bill that provided some relief to schools. It was a small amount of money, but what I will say is that the board essentially invested all of it towards teachers and curriculum, so things that really make a difference in schools. So those are more resources that we had since we last met in May. And then just last week, the school board and I met again to invest some of the anticipated revenues from the state towards more teacher positions. So in total, ASD will be adding back about 100 educator positions, and about 70 have already been allocated to schools, and principals are actively hiring now. So I say all of that because if you or if you know somebody who's a prospective teacher, we want you here in ASD. Frankly, we need you here in ASD.
Good to know. Well, it's time for us to take a short break. And when we return, I'll continue my conversation with Anchorage School District Superintendent Dr. Jarrett Bryant. I'm Dave Waldron, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm Dave Waldron, and today we're gearing up for the 2026 school year with ASD Superintendent Dr. Jarrett Bryant. And we've been talking about a lot of things, including the effect of those 2024 changes with the start times and middle school enrollment, as well as the failed ballot propositions that took place in April and what that means exactly for ASD. So, Jarrett, I want to get kind of a snapshot of the Anchorage School District as it enters this new school year. I know we've had our fair share of struggles, but I believe we've had some gains. You mentioned one of them just a little while back about the reading proficiency. What can you tell us about that? Where do we stand right now with math and reading proficiency, and how are we projected to look in this school year?
Yeah, that's a great question, Dave. So shortly after that permanent BSA increase took place last summer, one of my big calls to action was to make legislators know that despite all of the turbulent circumstances that have plagued schools for many years, within ASD, we've been making progress in the right direction. So I mentioned last year we saw a 5% gain in eighth grade math proficiency. That's a huge win for our kids. We're seeing even greater increases among some of our underserved populations historically. And we're really proud of that, and there's still a lot of work to be done. We've also seen on our literacy screeners last year, for example, a 10% increase in the number of kindergarten and first graders reading on benchmark. Really proud of that. And now the next step is to move the needle on reading proficiency for early grades. We've also seen the highest graduation rates that we've had since before the pandemic. So now we're well over that 83% mark, and we're even higher when you look at five-year graduation rates. And part of the reason for that is because we've implemented over 20 new career and technical education pathways that are aligned to high-demand, high-wage jobs all over Alaska. And that's part of the work you might know as the Academies of Anchorage. And of those students that complete those career pathways, 95% of them graduate in 4 years. So the more we grow out these pathways, I think that that graduation rate number is going to go even higher. And then I hope I don't get in trouble for this, but I got a sneak preview into the 2026 assessment data from the state. And it's looking like ASD will be exceeding state averages in both reading and math for 2026. And that was despite all the obstacles that we discussed earlier. And we still have room to grow. But one of the other things that we've done in ASD is we've listened to the community when it's come to, we need more spaces at high demand schools. One school that comes to mind is the Alaska Native Cultural Charter School. when I came to ASD 4 years ago, that school, incredible program, it was in a hallway in Betty Davis East Anchorage High School. And fast forward to today, now it's in a new facility. It's in the formerly Lakewood Elementary facility. It's a building designed for about 500 kids. And now you see that program thriving from just a few dozen kids in a hallway. Now you have over 400 students in that program. And that's a Title I choice school here in the Anchorage School District. And the more we do things like that, I think that's going to help move the needle too. And it addresses charter school wait lists and all sorts of other things that have plagued the district for a number of years. And while we do have room to grow, I think these things collectively have helped us make a positive difference on academic achievement.
Well, I haven't set foot in East Anchorage High School since I graduated in 98. So I'm going to have to go check it out now. You made me feel a little nostalgic there. Well, I know a big goal of yours when you became superintendent was to cut down on the absentee rates of our students. You mentioned that as one of your top priorities. Have you been able to identify why those rates are so high, and how has the effort gone so far for you and your staff to cut those absentee rates?
Yeah, and that's another area where we've made some progress as well. So absenteeism is a very complicated topic because it really lives both with the school system, but also the broader community and parents. So you need to connect the dots between those three populations to give students the services they need to get to school on time. But what my team has done was we've created basically a heat map that helps us understand who are the students that are most likely to be chronically absent, and we provided them extra supports, and that support looks different from school to school. But amongst that targeted population, we've also seen a 10% decline in the chronic absenteeism the last I checked. And another piece of it is there's a overlap between those that are chronically absent and those that have disciplinary infractions in schools. So at the middle school level, for example, we've seen a 20% decline in the number of out-of-school suspensions for middle schoolers. And we saw a similar decline at high schools just a couple of years ago. And part of it is because we've implemented what they call positive behavior intervention supports. So instead of just punishing a student that, you know, has needs and they're acting out, really rewarding good behavior and modeling core values of the school is really going a long way, especially for our students that need a little extra support. And, you know, chronic absenteeism is a huge issue across the state of Alaska. And, you know, you can have policy debates on the role of compulsory attendance and those sorts of things. I do think that there is a need for some sort of statewide task force. We can get all the players together and think about a policy solution for this. But at the district level, my focus is to really provide as much support as we reasonably can for the students who need that boost to get to school, because frankly, that's the place where many of our students feel safe and have access to food and caring adults and wonderful learning opportunities.
Yeah, it's hard to succeed at school when you are not at school. Well, I want to talk about some other stuff there, maybe some things that aren't so doom and gloom. You're mentioning a lot of progress going on in ASD, it sounds like, and a lot of good marks, high marks being made in education. Is it frustrating to have this progress but have this obvious kind of disconnect with the voter that shot down these ballots? And what do you think is the number one thing that can push us over that mark? You said you have the information now. You have a good feeling about where we need to go. How confident are you that we will get there?
I feel really confident that we'll get there. And I think the more and more that we get out there and engage with the community, you see these great two-way dialogues. Because as you mentioned, we are making progress. And there are people, even those in elected office, who don't fully understand the ways in which districts across the state, despite the obstacles, are making positive progress towards learning. So a part of it is education. And a part of it is figuring out ways to really hear families where they're at and to try to deliver something for them that helps them see the value in their education. Going back to the data I shared earlier, almost as many people who believe that ASD can do better with the way they spend money, they agree that taxes are too high. And the reason why that matters is because when everyday Anchorage residents don't see the value in the education that they're funding, be it they're a parent or not a parent, that can really hurt us when it comes to passing successful bond propositions if we don't go the distance to understand where they're coming from and help them see the positive things that are happening and also take some negative feedback in stride that, hey, you can do X and Y, Z better. That will help me feel confident that ASD can be a good steward of funds and deliver for students. I think a lot of that work is happening, but I also have the humility to say that I may not know what I don't know. And that's part of the underlying urgency amongst ASD listens, because I fully intend to ask the board to put a bond proposition on the April ballot. And I'll also have to ask the assembly, because I think it's an endeavor worth pursuing. If we don't upgrade our facilities, I think we're taking a step in the wrong direction. We need our facilities to endure for another generation of kids. And that $1.5 billion is quickly going to hit $2 plus billion. So if we don't do something now, it might be too late.
Got it. Well, I want to talk snow days with you, Jared. I know this is a fun conversation we had a few years back. I know you've had a wild ride in your 4 years with ASD regarding the snow. We had those two incredibly heavy snow years, including just last year. And then we had the 2 years with light snow, one that was practically no snow at all. So I know you initially wanted to make remote learning days kind of a thing instead of those classic snow days. But recently you moved back to a more conventional approach with like a true snow day where the kid gets to stay home. They don't have a learning schedule for the day. What have you learned about the snow days here in Anchorage, and what approach do you feel works best for students?
Yeah,
and parents.
That's a great question. And just to remind the public, I'm from Texas, so yeah. I'm learning snow like a lot of people. But we did have some extraordinary weather.
Yeah.
Truly, my first 2 years were huge. I call them snowpocalypses. Mm-hmm. Lots and lots of snow. And of course, that really hurts us when it comes to providing that continuity of learning for our kids. The number one thing I'll say is that, one, I'm really thankful to have a partner in Mayor LaFrance, who I really think has done a phenomenal job at putting more resources on this urgent need. I see it with my resident hat on, and I also see it as a superintendent, because last year we did have quite a bit of snow and ice, and we only had to close school 4 days. And this year we did a couple things, as you alluded to. So the first thing is that we're only doing in-person learning. And really that's in response to parents that are willing to defer that day towards the end of the calendar, because they believe that that in-person learning is the best modality for their kid and many kids across the system. There are some advantages to remote learning, and under very extraordinary circumstances, we may implement that, but our priority is continuity of in-person instruction. That's the in-person standard. Something I've done to make it a little bit more accessible to the public was last year, we actually put on our calendar for the very first time inclement weather days. So the public knew in advance, if there is a snow event, this is when the day will be made up. And then the other thing that's happened since we last spoke was, in partnership with our Educators Association, ASD was actually able to add 3 additional school days to the year, or rather 3 additional days to the calendar, mm-hmm. some of which can be used for instruction. And that gives us an important buffer for snow days as well. But the bottom line is that there's opportunities for students to receive more minutes to learn than they've ever had in ASD. We're proud of that. Bad weather can happen, but at the end of the day, when I get that call at 4 a.m. from my staff saying, hey, one of our drivers just slid into a ditch, it's not safe for kids, you better believe I'll be closing schools,
right.
And no one can negotiate me out of that.
Well, yeah, and you're going to always make someone angry with that decision, whether you end up closing school for the day or you keep it open. So that one is unavoidable. And I know people are like, stop talking about snow, it's August. But so is the plan to have those couple of kind of freebie days, if you will, of potential school closure, and then if it goes past the, I think it was like 2 days, that's when you start adding more days onto the end of the school year?
That's right. Okay. So we have days built into the calendar, and then if there are even more days beyond that, we will use the makeup days on the calendar. And as we learned the first year during the first snowpocalypse, if you have days even beyond that, we'll have to look at talking with the state. I will say the most unpopular thing that I've ever done as superintendent is actually around snow days. The most unpopular thing I ever did was I added, I think it was 10 minutes to the end of the day for 6 weeks. And mm-hmm. that was very, very unpopular. So I'm not sure we'll do that again, right. But we do need to make sure that students get their instructional time.
Absolutely. Well, what are some things that people can look forward to? I know we spent a lot of time talking about money that's not going to be distributed through ASD. We talked about, a lot of challenges, but what are some things people can look forward to in the school year, whether it's new programming, new transportation options? What's going on that people may not have heard about?
I think this is the year to really focus on what do we have. And I am just blown away when I get the opportunity to see our principals and teachers preparing for the beginning of the year We recently welcomed back our educators into the district. I had the opportunity to recently greet our new to ASD teachers as well. So these are a fresh crop of teachers from all over the country who really want to be here, and they really want to provide a phenomenal education for your students. So when I think about the positive things, it really is those people in the buildings. We have incredible principals that are ready to welcome students back. We also have incredible teachers that have a tough job, one of the toughest jobs in America, who are willing to give their 1,000% for your kids because they're worth it. And then on my end, this year is about discipline and restraint. It's not the year to be adding a ton of different initiatives and to have people's focus go in 10 different directions. It's really quite the opposite. So one thing you will notice is that we're rolling out what we're calling the Academic Strategic Action Plan. So that's really, at a high level, we have the board goals that govern the district to improve reading, math, and graduation rates, which we call college, career, and life readiness. And then underneath those board goals are the tactics. What do we know works to improve academic achievement? We know what a lot of these things are because, as I shared earlier, we have seen some progress, and we really need to double down on what works and to consider sunsetting the things that aren't directly tied to those gains in achievement. So the Academic Strategic Action Plan is really a call to action at the leadership level to keep our ask to the schools very focused on what's going to move the needles academically. So I hope that provides some relief, but this Academic Strategic Action Plan is going to hold us all accountable to focusing on what matters, which is to improve the outcome in education for every single one of our students. And then the other thing, too, is that I know it's really complicated to keep up with the ins and outs of the budgets as the school board's deliberating. You know, I know we pass a budget in late February, early March, it goes to the assembly, funding changes, all sorts of things change, yada, yada. So at the end of the day, sometimes families don't even know what was cut, what's not cut. So I do want to provide at least some size of relief that since that initial budget was first developed in February, our school board and legislators have worked really hard to open up opportunities to restore some things. So something that you might have read about back in February, March was that ASD was going to make all sorts of reductions to sports. This is good news. We're able to undo most of those reductions going into next school year. So almost all of those sports will be made available at our schools next year, with some very small exceptions. We also had similar discussions around the availability of healthcare services, because when you're trying to protect class sizes, you have to have difficult conversations on support services within the buildings, really just to protect the number of teachers that you have in classrooms. So all of that said, we have a similar level of healthcare service providers in our schools. So we've been able to add back quite a number of nurses since February. We had a number of conversations around changing the middle school schedule. I spoke really highly about this special middle school schedule earlier in this conversation. We were able to protect that schedule for at least another year, and it's one of my big goals to protect that for at least a couple more years out. Even though it is an extra investment, it means we need more teachers to staff our middle schools. But what I'm hearing from the community and what I'm seeing as I go into middle schools is it's something worth protecting. So you're going to see that next year, that you're going to notice that more if you're a middle school educator. But if you're a parent, you do know that your teachers are meeting for about an hour to really deep dive into what your individual child needs. So those are just a few of the things that we've been able to add back. And really the biggest challenge for us is going to be lowering those class sizes. And that's our top priority, which is why every single time new dollars have come into the district, a huge portion of that has gone directly back into teachers. So as I shared earlier, we've added about 100 educator positions since July. And now the big task is hiring them, getting them into buildings, and providing much needed relief to our teachers and hopefully some assurance to our parents.
All right. Well, I just have one last question for you, Jarrett. You've been here 4 years now as superintendent. You've had some time to reflect on your time here. What have you found most enlightening about your time in Alaska?
Good question. I think this is a great community. I came here for the adventure of making a difference in Alaska's largest district. It reminded me a lot of what I loved about my previous district. Very diverse, a community that adores public education, big schools, small schools, great learning opportunities. But I think the reason why I stayed is that, you know, I see Alaskans at their best in my job. Of course, I have many moments where I'm in a tense boardroom and people are advocating for their children, but I also think back to October when there was an unprecedented typhoon that hit Western Alaska. And something that happened so far away, what does that have to do with me as superintendent? It's because I couldn't have predicted that I'd be taking in 150 new students in October of my fourth year as superintendent. And of course, that was its own task. And I was just blown away when I looked at my principals rolling up their sleeves, welcoming those students into their special programs. A number of those students ended up at ASD's UBIC Immersion Program, for example. When I saw a city that could have had a very negative discussion around sharing resources when we're so resource constrained, and to not see that at all, and to see everyday Alaskans welcoming those evacuees from their villages into their homes, into their schools, into their neighborhoods, to see the community do everything from donate basketball sneakers to Halloween costumes to those kids, to fast forward to last May when I got to shake the hands of those eight high schoolers that are going off to their post-secondary destinations, to even welcoming in some of the Lower Kuspokwim School District staff members who've decided to make a permanent home here in ASD. I get the opportunity in my role to see people at their best, and it was in that moment and other moments like it that I've really learned what it means to be Alaskan, and it's why I choose to stay.
Oh, it sounds like you fit in just perfectly there. Well, I want to thank my guest, Dr. Jarrett Bryant. He's the superintendent for Anchorage School District. Jarrett, thanks for taking the time to talk with me. I know this is a busy time of year for you, especially this week.
Thank you, Dave.
After the short break, we'll be back with State of Art. I'm your host, Dave Waldron, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media.
From Alaska Public Media, this is State of Art. Welcome to State of Art, your weekly dose of Anchorage arts and culture. I'm Ammon Swenson. Coming up, we'll hear from former pro snowboarder turned musician Gus Engel. Performing under the name Gus Engelhorn, he released his fourth album, The Broken Balladeer, earlier this year. There's a spider in the pepper, pepper, pepper in a fly. Second by the scent of the second on the right. Seventeen, seventeen, seven, that's tonight. Spider in the pepper, pepper, pepper in a pepper. Back in his snowboarding days, Engel's unique dress, creative snowboard style, and weirdo mentality set him apart from his peers. After switching gears from writing, his rough around the edges, pop meets psychedelic meets surreal folk songs caught the attention of some of his 90s music heroes.
So we were on this record label in Montreal, and you know, I'm a huge Butthole Surfers fan. And when we got on there, they were like, yeah, if you would ever be interested in working with a producer, then like let us know and we'll see if we have any contacts that could like make it happen. And so we kind of gave them like Paul Leary and Dave Fridman, who does like Flamey Lips and stuff, and like a couple other people. I can't remember who, but honestly, what I gave him, like Paul Leary, I was like, oh, that's never going to happen. That's impossible. Like, there's no way we're ever going to, like, he's not going to write us back. And then like Mega Lee from the label, she was like, my friend knows someone at his label and they like got a hold of him and I sent him the music and he said he likes it and he wants to do it. And he calls me like, and he's like, he wants to talk to you on the phone. And he calls me up and he's got this awesome like Texan drawl. He's like, hey man, I like your songs. Like, oh, I don't produce anymore, but I'll mix it, you know? And I'm like, oh man, this is crazy. I'm like talking to Paul Leary. And then, so anyway, he mixed the record and then the mixing was so much fun and we had such a good time doing it and like talking about it. And so anyway, I like next album comes around and I write him and I'm like, hey, I don't know. I know you don't produce anymore, but figure I'd at least like give it a shot. And he's like, yeah, I'll do it. And then he's like, just come down to Texas and do it in my friend's studio. So we went down to Austin and it was the most fun. I've always like been blessed to work with like really fun people in the studio. This one was like just so much fun. Definitely like a dream come true kind of situation.
In addition to Paul Leary though, like you've got some other cool folks who had their hands on this album. You want to talk about them at all? Sounds like, you know, the engineering and the mastering, some kind of cool folks.
Totally. Like, I mean, the two people that were in the studio with us, Stuart Sullivan and Paul Leary, they're like the two people that did like that Sublime record and they did like Meat Puppets records and like all these just crazy stuff that I like worship, you know? And so he's like, yeah, my buddy Kramer, like, he's in town for South by Southwest. Like, he can come in and do bass. And I'm like, Kramer's made so many of my favorite records, too. Like, he's, like, a big producer and an amazing bassist who played with, like, you know, Butthole Surfers, Wii, and all kinds of bands I'm super into. And then the cherry on top was, like, at the end when we had to master it. He was like, yeah, I'm going to ask Howie Weinberg to master it. And in my mind, I'm like, I think that's the guy who, like, mastered Nevermind. and then I look it up, and it's like he's mastered, like, Nevermind and, like, I don't know, every record I love pretty much. Like, he's won, like, 30 Grammys or something. Like, and he did it for super cheap because, I mean, it's just Paul, like, knowing people and using, you know, using his connections and stuff to like hook us up. But it was unreal. Like, we were like, I mean, we're just like this tiny little insignificant band that is, like, you know, trying our best, but it was pretty, I did not see that coming. That's for sure.
Well, I mean, I don't think you could put all that on Paul, just kind of like his contacts and stuff. Cause I feel like these dudes wouldn't work with you if they didn't like you or didn't like your music.
He did tell me that, I guess. Howie did tell me a bunch of really nice stuff, too, which also blew my mind. He was like, man, I really like what you're doing. And, I mean, it was cool. And, like, Kramer, who did the bass, he's like, this record's really important to me and stuff. Like, and all these people are, like, they're, like, my heroes, you know? So it's really kept me going because it's tough out there being a musician, like, in general, and it always has been, and now maybe more than ever. So it's, like, those are the kind of things that give you the push to keep going, you know, when people you really respect tell you it's worthwhile.
Well, it sounds like the dudes working on the album were just, like, having fun.
Dude, it definitely felt like that. Like, it felt like kind of one of those things where everybody's like everybody was having a really good time. Like, Paul told me after the thing, he's like, that's the most fun I ever had in the studio. And it made me so happy. And I have this tradition where I make a cake every time I finish a record. So at the last day, I made a big cake and then I, like, brought it in and we all ate this cake together. It was a really good time.
You know, when I listen to your music, you know, all I can really think of is just how, like, creatively fearless you seem. Do you struggle with that perfectionism or, like, self-doubts when it comes to your art? What's your state of mind like with that? Because, like I said, you seem like you are extremely creatively brave.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that. But yeah, I mean, I think it's just also just me being a lifelong weirdo. You know, I don't know how to do it any other way. You know, it's like bigger than me. Like, it's funny. I'm always aiming for, like, some sort of radio hit, believe it or not. But then, like, it just gets away from me. And then all of a sudden I'm, like, singing about some crazy, I don't know, spider thing, you know, but yeah, I don't know. I guess I burden myself a little bit with, like, the desire to be original in some way. You know, I think I'm always trying to at least if I don't feel like I'm in my own little world, that I don't feel like it's done or something. You know what I mean? It's gotta feel. I like it when it feels kind of otherworldly and, like, people are like, what is this? You know, I kind of like that reaction. Like, or when people laugh, I kind of like when people think it's funny or crazy or I don't know. I don't know why I'm aiming for that sometimes, but it's like, it's funny. This is always such a good question because I feel like every artist can relate to, like, to the idea of, like, why do you think a thing is done? What is it in your brain that clicks over and says that thing is done? And it's like, what is that, like, internal checklist that you have? Like, where it's like, I don't think it's always just one thing. It's like, usually, like, it has this, this, and this. It has to have, like, 5 of 10 of these things. Just like for me, I feel like it's gotta have some humor, and it's gotta have something personal. Like, I think it's got to be personal for me, or else I think that's one's like that, because I feel like if it's not personal, then you don't end up feeling strongly enough about it to feel like it's done, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's just going through that, you know, you go through that period where you're just kind of examining it. And I think you have to, for me, it has to feel pretty dynamic and multidimensional, like musically and lyrically, I think. And I think the music's got to fit with the lyrics, like, they got to be married together in some sort of interesting way, at least interesting to me. But yeah, it's, so I don't know. I think I just end up going into strange territory, to answer your question, by, like, attempting to do something that I feel like is sort of approaching originality.
Has anybody ever brought this up, that I'm pretty familiar with a bunch of your snowboard parts, like some of the bigger ones. Has anybody ever related your snowboarding to your music? Because they're both, there's similarities, dude, where it's kind of like what you're talking about, where it's like you're just trying to find your kind of like own way through a song. That's kind of like one of the things that, you know, I remember most about your snowboarding is the creativity and the kind of like, I'm going to have fun on this snowboard regardless of where I am or what I have to ride. Is that kind of, it's feel like that's your similar approach to music.
It's funny because I do think about that sometimes. I think like, I do feel like my approach to snowboarding completely mirrors my approach to music in like every single way, which is, it's kind of been almost helpful to me to have gone through like snowboarding and then gotten to music, because I feel like they're kind of both just creative pursuits, and the lessons I learned when I was snowboarding kind of apply almost always to music. But yeah, it's such a funny thing because I don't know why I have to try to approach things this way, but I always seem to be a little unorthodox for sure. But yeah, I think the way I approach snowboarding is totally the same.
Okay, so I want to talk about your lyrics a little bit. I thought it was interesting that you mentioned that, you know, they typically come from like a personal place, because sometimes they're weird, dude. but let's talk about them. So like, they're kind of like cryptic. Sometimes they're childlike, they're poetic, and like kind of some of your other stuff, they seem just super uninhibited. And I mean, where do you typically draw inspiration from to, you know, do your writing?
Okay, so first of all, I guess the last couple records, I haven't written anything. I just come up with it all as I'm playing the guitar. I'm just kind of like freestyling over the top, not unlike a certain Jay-Z does on his records. But yeah, so, and I honestly do not know where it all comes from. It is just a total mystery to me. But it is, I do think there's two modes I kind of like to be in. There's the storytelling mode. Like, I love if I could tell a story. But in, like you said, but was still maintaining some layer of mystery over the whole thing. Like, maybe if you could tell a story, but make it so it's vague enough where people are like, wait, what? Like, you're like, it's a ghost. You know, you're kind of given little bits and pieces that people kind of have to arrange in their brain to like try to almost kind of unlock what story you're trying to tell. So
yeah.
I think there's that kind of storytelling. I love storytelling in general. And then there's another mode I like to go in where it's just pure like da-da chaos realism, where it's like, it's almost just the sound of the words and like, and just what they evoke, you know, I guess. Yeah. And I love that freedom. If I ever listen to my music, I'm like, oh, okay, that's like kind of what I do. I'm either telling a story or it's complete like Lewis Carroll nonsense, you know?
Do you think that maybe like creatively you're kind of reaching a point where you're more like satisfied creatively, you know, when you're always just kind of chasing that thing that you can't really reach? Like, do you feel like you're kind of getting to a, like a creatively satisfying place with your music?
Man, I would like to think so, but it's like Billy Joel says in Vienna, only fools are satisfied, you know? It's like, but no, I don't know. I don't know if I'm satisfied, but I will say I have finally written a couple songs that, like, you know, if I pick my favorite ones out of there and I put them all on a list, I'm starting to be like, oh, these are like, I like these ones. But yeah, I'm definitely hoping that satisfaction is on the horizon. I don't know. We'll see.
Hey, Harvey. Isn't it funny? Didn't you say his wife's name was
Farrah.
And one day a hand came crashing down from above and crushed Sarah. So the little fly flew down and landed by her side, and he said to her, "There, there, Sarah, it'll be alright. The time has come for your final flight." There's a spider and a pepper, 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 little fly, second by the center, the second from the right.
That was musician Gus Engel, formerly of Anchorage. He records and performs under the name Gus Engelhorn. He released his fourth album, The Broken Balladeer, earlier this year. And that's all for State of Art. I'm Ammon Swenson.
And that's all for our show. Thanks to our guest, Dr. Jaron Bryant. Ammon Swenson produces this show. You can find us at the Hometown Alaska page on alaskapublic.org, the Alaska Public Media app, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Dave Waldron, and thanks for listening.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.